Yeah, thanks, John. Oh, yeah, well, things are pretty rough. You're talking about depression here today. It's like I mentioned to you earlier, I said the people on welfare are getting $2.5 a week, and that's how they live. I don't hear what you hear on there, you're hearing me, right?
Mm-hmm.
The way I talk.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't hear myself talking to you.
Is that right? Sounds different.
Sounds different.
I've got a lot of people there. Now, it was hard times, and but what about politically? You remember who was mayor or what was going on with politics then?
Oh, those years that we call right before the election, they used to make big bonfires. Was that? And they had a sort of a torture light parade going up Center Avenue. And in those years, in the early 30s, there was a mayor called Klein who was later indicted for something or other that he did. He got into a big wreck for $4,000 or $5,000 or something for his office. And then the new mayor came around called McNair, and he was the single tax proponent. That was just a, and there was a Jewish fellow by the name of Charlie Mason who became his right-hand man. Charlie Mason was a bite-sized, bright, very bright. And he was really the mayor's right-hand man. He was but then the mayor didn't last too long in office. And, then, yeah, for instance, I remember we were there. Next day, I remember the next day they caught on fire. It was on Pier 6. And we were on the left side of the road, and the editor was looking back in my backyard. And I wasn't at the very important. I jumped and died. And I was standing living on the corner of the village street, Westfield. I said, I took this car, I was following the young person. I was very anxious. I just said, I don't know what to do with this. This is tough.
What did you use the horses for?
Well, did that tell us who the horses were? What cars? We're talking about horse and wagon. You know, the streets were clear. As all you saw, the streets beside the cinder was on those quite broken blocks. You saw a lot of horsemen there.
Mm-hmm.
And,
what
were rabbis doing? Well, the rabbis at that time, they were being a rabbi civic at that time, and a rabbi who seemed to be, which I had no connection whatsoever. My dad did not, was not a follower of any of these. And in all of those that he did, when he was living on it, when he went to the synagogue, when he went to the Zionist Institute, which predated Orlando City, the Zionist Institute that Orlando City was built. And they had a high holiday service here. And that was in the Orlando City Museum when we went to service to the highway to the Hebrew Institute. And it's interesting that he said the road behind us was and about the fact, I didn't think, he was gone.
Uh-huh.
So all his brothers and his father, they said, I just want to have a little bit of his eyes standing there and sitting right there at the high holiday.
Now, what town did you say your father came from?
Mizrich.
Mizrich, in Poland.
The only S-E-R-I-T-C-H, Mizrich.
M-E-S.
M-E-S-E-R. I-T-C-H, Mizrich.
And you said that's where her freedom was found.
Well, that's, no, that was actually the musician Muggins.
Oh.
He was a great political leader.
I see.
Came from that town. And if you read on Cathedral, you'll come across his name.
Mm-hmm, because that was when Minnie Fowler was not Cathedral thing, didn't he?
No, he did not belong to any. He was a liberal Jew, not liberal in terms of belonging to the conservative movement, and I'll tell you about that. He was not a Jew who had a beard, and he did not put a straw man over the mind.
That's when you were growing up, and you got a little older, you got things, and you got a little.
Doctor comes here to the house, house calls, I remember I went to examination to Dr. Webster, and his associate at that time was Phil Rosenthal, I divided my time between the Matter of fact, we went to Cuba for some time. We went to Cuba as sort of a recreation program there, and they had in the basement of the room where they played And then we had a square, they had a little pocket there, and they sort of, what do you call it, and it sits on this, and you had a, and you were just playing Billy, the pool. So they used to create a job for a while, and what's the name, Zara Tucker was on that program, and Zara was supposed to work there in no time, social worker, and she'd worked at these high careers, and also, doing a program for years.
And you went to McKelvey, and then you went on to Fifth Avenue High.
But no, I went to Fifth Avenue High for a year, and then I, when I went, I decided to go to Shenley, here in Hill. And I was on the borderline, I said, I needed to sit, I said, I went to Shenley site. I decided to go to Shenley because I had a puppy love for a young lady, and I said, I want to go. It's down there, I've been there too long, and I went back to Fifth Avenue High School. And for the rest of it, I competed with and did not graduate. I was kicked out of school. I was kicked out of school because I was sick. And my work number's not around the school, and those numbers up on the hill. And most of the people who came around the hill with me were the people who reacted to the process. And I, the principal at that time was secretary. I remember sitting in his office with my grade guy, my secretary. And vice principal there, masters. And secretary, I think he was the highest piece of clearing that the guy, I don't know what he was. He said, if you tell me that you will not write any more numbers, I will permit you to continue your studies. I said, Mr. Secretary, I said, I cannot tell you, I'm not going to give you my way and say I'm going to write numbers, I'm not going to write numbers, because I will write them. I don't care what you do. Just tell me that you will not write numbers. I can't be dishonest with myself. And the master's advice for the civil is if you cannot lie, you say, I don't care if you, I want you to tell me that you will not write numbers. I said, well, okay, if you can't tell me that you don't write numbers, you cannot come back to school, you have to stay in line. Well, except, no, except that he didn't care what I did. I said, I didn't want to lie. Why should I lie? So I'm not going to write numbers and go out and write numbers. I have to live with myself.
Is your mother living there?
Yeah, my mother, yeah. And,
so what did you do then?
So then, I continued writing numbers, and I told you that I was involved with the theater student.
Something like that.
What about
that's the thing called, you only have to do a full
career
start.
Courtship and marriage and
my courtship? Yeah. That was later on. Mm-hmm. And I was going through 40, so we're going through 30. What do you want to do?
We're getting thrown out of high school. Then what's next?
Well, we're done with anchor, we're talking 32, 33. Mm-hmm. But then I had that whole period of theater.
Right,
well,
is there anything else you want to tell us about your young life in the hill, your mother, or?
Well, I guess I don't know what else I can tell you about it, but not that bad.
You got involved in music theater.
Would you like to know about the history of your history?
Your history, how you got involved with it.
Two movie houses. One is called the Victoria Theater, and the other is called the Center Square Theater. Center Square Theater was a new theater, and as it was developing, owned by the same, by Hendel, a couple of Jewish actors from New York sold them the idea to take the Victoria Theater, and since they're giving that up, because you know, by having two motion picture houses on Center Avenue, having the Center Square, let them run it in Yiddish theater. But they ran it on a vaudeville level, you know, they go up there and do skits. I remember as a kid, I'm talking about 1927, in those years, you know, when I said how it was like, 13 years of age, you know, how much I'm saying. You know, 1914 to 27?
When did you get that?
1914, 27? Did I say 1914? I guess, yeah. First of all, because I remember that people would go into the theater, or they even would carry their pop boxes, which you have to sit on, you know, and they'd watch these sketches and so on and so forth. Now, the Roosevelt Theater was being built at that time. Now, the old man Hendel there was an older brother. He was, that's where the story goes, I mean, that's what I heard, and I he belonged to the Romanian school on Robert Street. And so did Mr. Lando belong to the Romanian school. So, when he started to have these Jewish theater, you know, the skits going on, so Lando decided, I want to be a big shot. So he went ahead and they stay away with the old Zionist Institute, and he put up the Lando Theater. So the Center Square also started to play Yiddish theater, so you had two Yiddish companies on Center Avenue. One was Union, the Hebrew actor Union, which was by Lando, which you had, and the other was what they were called, then they called the League, which were also Yiddish actors, but they did not belong to Union. So you had two Yiddish companies operating on Center Avenue, each doing their plays in their respective ways. I don't say one was better than the other, but they were playing Yiddish theater. Now, let me tell you, you know, I should have talked about stores being closed on the, you know, it was a holiday. But you know, it's a very interesting phenomenon in Jewish life. Maybe if you look to Sheldon, could you come up with an answer? The Hill District was an Orthodox community, a Jewish Orthodox community. I don't know if you say it was a Pentecost system, I don't know what you call it, but the 60 Orthodox, I'm talking about the 18 county synagogues on the hill. And they were all supported, more or less, you know, they supported. But the Orthodox Jews that Rabbi Sayers, and that Rabbi Kochin, and that Rabbi Ashimsky, they knew that Jews are a people. And when you have a people, you have various facets. Some are observant, some are non-observant, some are partially observant. That's not, we're a Jewish civilization. So we play theater on Friday night. Friday night. And Mr. Lander, who was the president of the Romanian Orthodox Synagogue, was the owner of the theater. And he would come into the theater on Friday night.
Pay for a ticket.
And he would pay for a ticket, but then he was his theater. But
he got a people there.
Paid. It went to the box office and bought. And nobody said a word. Because they knew. Don't go to the synagogue on Friday night. Or make up the synagogue on Friday night, you know. Go home, have their Friday night meal, and be down at the theater at 8:30 to see a show. Saturday matinee, he played Yiddish theater. Nobody picked it up. Nobody said you should not play, and so on and so forth. They were more tolerant. But, you know, he's a Jew. If I can't, I celebrate my Friday night today. I want to celebrate it, you could tell me not to celebrate, right? So I want to go to the movies. I want to go to see Yiddish plays. That's I don't even think that point out there, that'd be sick.
Were the actors local, or did they come from New York?
No, these are all New York actors.
They came in for performances.
They lived here. They played theater here for a season. They started after Rosh Hashanah, and they play till April, till Pesach.
Resident companies.
Two
theaters. How did the people have money to go? Did your mother go?
Yeah, but they paid at that time. I have a poster. I have a copy of the poster. I produced the poster. I got a couple of years back in the poster of the conference presents, you know. And the poster is 35 cents or 50 cents. They pay 35 cents to go to see it to go to see a play, 50 cents to go to see it. And to them, it was a pleasure to hear the Yiddish words. They were left at 35 cents.
How long did they run in particular production?
Well, they did two or three weeks.
They'd have the production for a couple of days only?
That's right, yeah. Then, of course, as so that was at the beginning, I'm talking about 1930, 31, 32, 33. Then already 35, already it became where they played one night a week on Sunday night because, and I'll come to that later if you want to talk about that, or the transition from the Lando Theater to the Roosevelt Theater, or to the Sunday School Theater. Because after a few years, the theater, the non-union actors were saying that went under. They could not maintain themselves or find a place.
What do you mean by union?
It's like a union. These actors belong to a union. Yeah. Like equity, it's equity, you know, it was after this. Yeah, they were a union.
They're all
union. Yeah, they were like, sure, they were like, they were like, 80, 90 years old. And they came into town the first time, and Mr. Landon signed a contract about the union actors, and they paid them a wage. I mean, they were guaranteed, I think, at that time, they said they were getting $125 a week, even a salary. And that took us 2 years, and he decided not to, and then that's, I can tell you some very interesting stories about that, that's true, we had it for that. I started to usher it in 1930. We had opened up in 1929, I remember, and, as you see, the first production was 1929, and then the show was Yiddish and Natal, and the second day was stand up in my Yiddish and Natal, my Jewish girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started off with a musher, and then I started to write numbers. And the actors would play, and with me, and I would actually, and I would play on the 50 cents a night, and that's how I started to become involved with the theater students.
Where did the actors live in the
theater? No, they houses. They paid their $2 a week for
different
people. I'm talking about after, I'm talking about in 1932. You're making that transition where he paid the actors. 1932, Raheem Lando made a deal with the union. So he had a crash in front of Facebook. He made a deal with the union that he will guarantee the actors $10 a week. And based upon either that. And they would have a contract, which at that time they referred to the Schubert contract. The advertising would go off the top. And what is left, they would split 50-50. So if the 50% was more than $10 per actor per week, then the actor would get it. If it was less, the actor would still get his $10 a week. So the actors came in on that contract. In 1932, the company had it at that time. Lando did not live up to his commitment. There was a scene in the theater, they made this mission, the actor came on stage, and they talked to the people. They said, Christian Lando doesn't want to pay them, and so on and so forth. And Lando can't act no more. And he refused to act because he wasn't going to pay them. As a matter of fact, one of the men There was a company manager at that time, was a man by the name of Boris Bernardi, who was Hester Bernardi's brother. And I remember Hester Bernardi was a young kid. So then they left town, Richard left town. But also in that period, I might tell you, in 29, 30, 31, Hendel used to bring in the star attractions to the Fulton at that time, we can call the Fulton, I think it's called the Gaiety at that time, or Cecilia Moss. He would bring in Marty Pickton, he would bring in Maura Schwartz, he'd bring in Ludwig Zatz, he'd bring in Mr. and Mr. German. These were the star attractions. These were the companies who played a whole season in New York. Then they would go on the road and play Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Detroit, Chicago. And all these cities, by the way, had residents who had accompanied Cleveland, Detroit, Chicago, Philadelphia, for those who had more. And then I remember, then in 19, this company in 32, they left the city and they went down to St. Louis. To a theater called the Odeon Theater, hoping that there'll be much up there. Then another couple comes in on top of them from New York, which sounds like my director again, and they told the union, and they're actually looking for work. And so they came in on the same contract. Now, when they came in on the same contract, the same thing happened. He was used to pay them.
And that's the same handle with the
fruit market store. No, just Philando. So Hendel had the fruit market. Was a nephew of Harry Hendel. Right. Bob Hendel was active in the that showed him, and then the other one had the fruit market. He was also a nephew.
Now, which Hendel was this?
Harry Hendel.
And which Lando?
Mr. William Lando. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the owner of the Hendel Theater. But then the actors said they can't take it no more, so they made a deal with Harry Hendel, and they set up the Yiddish Theater over in the Roosevelt Theater, two performances a week, which was Sunday matinee and Sunday night. Also based upon that $10 guarantee and so on and so forth, and there they played, and they got along. I mean, as best as possible. But they played one day a week instead of playing 4 or 5 days a week and getting the same amount of money. And these actors, let me finish this, I remember I would be the one if they would really make sure that they kept in, like their lasses, families, and set up rooms for these people, and they paid $2 a week, like that was the expense that they paid to these people who had homes, having set for rent. And one of the great things, one of the nicest things that I recall is that and it was a regular theater with them. They had a Yiddish wedding on the stage. Real Yiddish wedding on the stage. With a performance. After the performance, the wedding people came just back there and they watched the real wedding on the stage. We were there for some of mine. I was in a picture and there was one picture left and I was never able to get that picture of the wedding party on the stage. And, that time I think was Cancer Green, and I lived at the picture that I see at the ceremony. It was a really interesting thing, the wedding on the stage.
It's amazing about theater that was downtown.
No, in the hill. That's what I had. It was a ceremony. It's a beautiful. There was a new book on theater. It was beautiful. It was a beautiful theater. That's been in the lobby. It was beautiful.
What did you say?
The lobby upstairs. Beautiful lobby in the theater. Boy, there's one of the best movie I've ever seen.
Was that built as a theater
showroom? What? No, it was a motion picture house. And it was built because the Center Square, they decided to send for a theater. The Center Square had 500 feet, something like that. You know. It came along and put it into a movie house that was over about 1,000 feet.
How many people were in the company? How many people would come in from New York?
Self-assistant.
Actors? They didn't have, makeup people?
No, just no. They would have.
Oh,
that's just they were and a company manager. That's why they came down.
What about the setting?
I tell this to my people to say, and I share with them, like, these people never speak to me. And I was working in real estate, and I said, I couldn't set up as a pastor, and I became a prop boy, and I became a coach, and, well, they have one set up. And with one door, with one window. You see, that was a set. And if you had a celebrity bid, we used to wallpaper the set, you see. You bought a roll of wallpaper for, what, 2 cents a roll or something. So on this show, you had the door stage right. On the other show, you had the door stage left. The window stage right and stage left. And you had different wallpapers that made it just, you know, that's the way we operated. There was no, they would tell that the pianist in Greek, he was a handyman. He became a set designer. What set designer? He said, okay, the director, whoever, head of the company, said, look, this